Okay, dudes and dudettes, you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Noel Clark. Don't you ever, ever, ever touch that dial.
I'm Stephen John Drew from Better Podcasting, a podcast about podcasting, part of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You've dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Haley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 357 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we have to record in the dark and sustain ourselves for the week on store-brand bread and warm water because we accidentally blew the podcast budget on elaborate costumes and props. Really great idea for an audio entertainment format, honestly. I'm Jay.
I'm Kier.
And I'm Haley. And this week we pieced together the next component of The Key to Time as we identified truth from alternative truth in The Androids of Terra, or Tara. The Doctor simply wanted a brief vacation, but as Romana set off to handle the task solo, it proved to be an invitation to four episodes worth of issues with imposters, both robotic and real.
Mm-hmm. You get what you pay for on this story. I mean, go ahead and read a synopsis out there and try to find out what the story is about, and it tells you, you know, gives you the little rundown. Yep, that is exactly what you're getting from this four-parter. But I will start as we so often do with the classics. Haley, what did you think of The Androids of Tara?
I kept waiting for the thing I was supposed to care about, and I didn't get it.
Okay, I can read between the lines on that one. Jay, was this one that you've watched before?
No, actually, this is my first time to this one as well.
Okay. So I have personally a nice list of positives to find in this one, but net to the good or net to the ill?
I mean, aside from the fact that I was exhausted as hell when I tried to watch the first episode and so kept finding myself nodding off, I don't think it was necessarily because of the show. I think it was just my state at the moment, because when I watched the final three, it was... I mean, it was able to keep me engaged. It wasn't the greatest that I've ever seen, but it was still fun. I enjoyed it. I do think that this was a fun ride.
Okay, that's an interesting point, because it's a matter of the engagement on this, I think, is kind of key because of the fact that we're dealing with a story where almost every single thing you need to know is handed to you within the first 15 minutes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Everything. And then you got to wonder, okay, what are the remaining 65 plus minutes of collective content really going to do?
When they run out of story, introduce another android.
Okay.
Or have Romana escape just to be recaptured off screen within 3 minutes.
Right. And literally go through the dialogue that says, I brought your treasure back to you because she ran away. So here she is again. I will say... as far as just overall, just the general feel of the story, while there may have been some predictability factors, the pacing wasn't bad. There may have been a handful of scenes that look like they might have been kind of trimmed for time a little. I didn't have to watch K-9 slowly burn his way through walls over and over. But all in all, I mean, you know, you had your fight sequences. They were, you know, relatively straightforward. I think a lot of the sword play was pretty well organized. I think big kudos on the fight choreography there. But I think the standout through this whole thing was Mary Tam.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I was having a conversation with somebody a couple of days ago where they were asking for an explanation. They were seeing, what were they watching? They were watching Pluto TV. Okay. And if anybody's getting familiar, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of months ago now, time is funny. You know, time travel is such a strange thing. You never know what you're supposed to remember. But they were asking, wait a second. I saw two different actors being referred to as Romana. And they couldn't remember which one they had seen first, right? They're just mm-hmm. starting to get familiar with Classic Who. And I had to break it down from there. Like, they said, well, why did it change? Was it something that the script dictated? And I gave the whole explanation of Mary Tam's departure and things. And they said, oh, that's kind of unfortunate, because from what I saw of the first Romana, she was really pretty solid. I'm like, hell yeah, she was solid. And this one, I mean, just as far as seeing her toggle back and forth between playing Romana or Android Romana 1 or Android Romana 2 or Princess or Princess Android, you know, she put a little something different into each iteration. So she was, I don't know, she was putting a hell of a lot more into it than some of her supporting cast who were, you know, Android copies of themselves. How did we feel about just the premise of the story? I mean, granted, this is a straight up pastiche of the idea of the coronation where there's, you know, the imposter. This has been done many, many times. Not so much in sci-fi. So this, you know, this is a sci-fi take on it. But no, I think I'm trying to think of where I know I've seen this done.
The Prince and the Pauper.
Within the sci-fi scope.
I'm sure there are instances, but I mean, really, the only thing that makes this, like, makes it fall into sci-fi is it's like, oh, we're using androids instead of lookalikes, but we still have lookalikes,
but we
have the androids and electric swords, because that's
zappy swords.
Yeah,
love the zappy swords. The fact that the prop on that was so simple as just replacing the hilt with a circuit board, and then they put a volume knob.
I saw that. It was great.
Why does this not get cosplayed more often? such a disappointment. Anyway,
says the guy who builds his own armor and weapons.
Well, exactly. You know, I don't have the time because I'm working on DeLorean Time Lord collars and whatnot. But but as far as like there are a lot of things here where I don't know if I would necessarily lump this in one of the stories where you say, oh, you know, they set up a good thing here, but they just didn't stick the landing on it, or, you know, what have you. This was one where, again, because you had so much handed to you in the first 15, 20 minutes, it was just a matter of, all right, well, how are you guys going to play it out? And me personally, it allowed me to sit back and just enjoy character performances.
Yeah.
So who were your rock stars? Other than Mary Tam. That's just a given. Just leave that one right in the hook, because that's right.
You know, I have to say the one that really stands out to me was Grindel. I mean, he was just, you know, over the top, mustache twirling bad guy, and he nailed it. I mean, it was fantastic. He just leaned into it and went with it.
Yeah, you knew from the second he showed up on screen he was the bad guy.
Yeah,
and he just never let up.
Right. I was really fascinated by this odd little relationship that he and Lamia shared. His surgeon slash engineer, and that, you know, the idea of, I brought you up from peasantry, and he keeps sort of dangling the carrot of greater things, just giving her enough hope.
And Romana called her out on it too. She's like, you know, he's using you, and Lamia just goes, I know, but it's better than nothing.
True.
And so it's like, it's not like she was even being taken in by him. She was just like, this is my lot in life, and I'm just going to go with it. It's the best I can be offered. So
I was kind of waiting for the turn where it's like, oh, she was actually using him. But
Or the moment when she realized that she deserved better and switched sides.
Yeah, the betrayal, the final comeuppance. Yeah. I felt like there were a lot of opportunities right within that final denouement that could have been worked in there, because just having him, you know, at the point where he's, you know, the sword fight takes it up onto the ramparts, and they're having it out for a moment, and you can hear all the rioting going on down below, and he's got the doctor, and he could continue this one. He could probably finish the doctor at some point, but he says there's this long pause. Turns around, just leaps off. That's fine.
Yeah.
But that could have been something where, you know, she comes out from behind the wall or something of that sort and ends it with a deft stab or something, you know? That would have been something where you're like, okay, that character has really not only been enjoyable, now she's justified and solid. But instead we get K-9 spinning in a boat. And then more.
Well, and the doctor's, you know, maniacal because... laughter.
True. Yeah, that was disturbing. I don't know. I think that most of the cast was, yeah, they were decent for what they got. I mean, even Prince Reinhardt was, yeah, he was supposed to be the, you know, the very noble, upstanding kind of, and he played it, and it's, yeah, I mean, it is a very one-dimensional kind of character. You know, he has his moments of bravery and then, you know, passes out because of his wounds, and it's that kind of thing, but that's what the story called for, and he was, you know, he was perfect at it. So I don't think that there was any really shortcomings in the maybe Grendel's like manservant person.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He seemed kind of superfluous, but everybody else was solid.
I don't know. He pours a nice glass of vinegar. I will say, with Reinhardt specifically, I'll give credit to Neville Jason on the portrayal there, because your tendency to want to play the sort of the, not really the ingenue, but the prince who has done no wrong. You know, he's really no fault against the guy. He's just sort of, you know, he's caught in these circumstances. But they make a line. The doctor makes a line when he prepares the android copy of him, and the swordmaster says he's a little too. And the doctor says intelligent.
Yeah.
But then you realize, like, no, Reinhardt's been playing it kind of. He is not quite that bright.
Well, and they've kind of set up this society where only the peasants are the ones that are like technically educated. In this society,
which that's an interesting take. Yeah.
I feel like there were some interesting things that they could have shown us in this episode, and then they just didn't.
Sort of as if they were implying that the nobility falls into a sort of an ignorant complacency,
or something.
They don't have to understand how it works.
Like, you know, they had we just said her name, Madame whatever,
Lamia.
She's a peasant, and that's why she has the technical and scientific skill to work on an android, and that's something that a noble person would not have.
Right. Explore that far enough, though, and you start wondering where the peasant uprising comes, because they realize they're the ones with the true power all along, and they can...
Yeah.
You know, that's Terminator. There you go, that's Terminator. I don't know. Well,
and it's... I mean, that with Grendel escaping at the end and all kinds of things like, I mean, this is rife for a follow-up, you know, a come back 100 years in the future, or even like 10 years in the future, or, you know, something like you can definitely come back to this planet at some point and have, you know, and not have to do like the world building and all of a sudden have a decent story premise just handed to you.
True. I wonder, to a certain degree. I mean, there was all sorts of extra undertone here in the writing. I mean, Grendel obviously being named after Beowulf's adversary from the, you know, from the epic sagas and things. So you would think, all right, well, this guy should have an awful lot more gravitas about him, and yet he is just a snidely whiplash. It's just an odd take. His supporting team is actually more interesting. I always found it more interesting watching, you know, all the seconds in command through this, including, you know, the sword master and everybody like that, and the doctor's poking around with him, you know, constantly taking his weapon away from him, inspecting it, and handing it back. I mean, how many times did that gag get played out?
Yeah,
I gotta wonder. Speaking specifically of the the comedic breaks on this, they aren't effectively within the dialogue. It seemed to me a lot of the instances where any of the really the nice little icebreaker comedic bits had nothing to do with the script. They were something more about the business that was getting added to scenes or particular takes on the lines. But right off the page, it wasn't particularly, you know, I don't want to give David Fisher too much credit for being able to write a decent joke.
No, because most of the jokes that were in the dialogue were, I mean, honestly, you expected them. They were the obvious low-hanging fruit.
Mm.
You know, the doctor being like, he's like, I've got important things to go on. And all of a sudden there's a sword at his throat. And he's like, or I could do what you said. You know, it's
right.
It's the stuff that you expect someone to, it's like, well, if I were going to write, you know, the cliche joke, this is what it would be. And that's what we got.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems to be. Well, I mean, we get a number of installments from David Fisher around this era. I mean, he was also Stones of Blood, for that matter, which wasn't exactly a knee slapper of a story either. So, you balance it.
Mm. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm okay with having the occasional episode that's just, it doesn't have to be overtly funny, but I appreciate it when the people that are on the show are like, it would be kind of, you know, here's a good visual gag or something like that. And it just adds to the story. You don't have to write the comedy into it, but having a team that knows how to be comedic when it's called for is nice.
That's true. All right. Well then, as far as it might kind of, you know, be a little predictable, but as far as rewatchability and recommendability to it, I think we can kind of go around the horn and say, this isn't one that you tell anybody that they have to put on their must-watch list. So let's just skip recommendability right off the bat. But for rewatchability, does it really have any merit for saying, you know what, if this comes on again, you know, I'll sit down and watch at least a story or two of it.
I feel like this is a good one I've got to fold my laundry. I want to put something on. And Disney Plus hasn't released a new episode of The Mandalorian yet, so sure, I'll put this on in the background. You know, it's fun enough that it's going to keep me entertained while I'm doing my thing, but I don't have to be engaged the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a lot of instances, you don't even have to be looking at the screen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I think I land on pretty much the same spot. Like, I'm not going to seek this particular episode out, probably, but if it's next in the queue and I've got a hamper full of laundry, then sure, it can just keep rolling.
Fair. Okay. Well, that's if that isn't a ringing endorsement, I don't know what is. So there you go. Add that to your season 16, ranking order as you're going through the DVD or the Blu-ray set. You know, if you're not going to go through it chronologically, you might want to push this one down towards the bottom a little bit because there are some other really good gems that should rise to the surface here. Again, unless you got a ton of laundry. So there you go. And who has more laundry than Mary Tam? Because she walks in and she actually alphabetizes her wardrobe rack. Tahiti.
That was an unnecessary gag.
I don't know, but that was a hell of an outfit, though. Everybody. I mean, the costumes in this entire story
were
so elaborate. I got to say, you know, you can tell you were right in the middle of the season because they said, what do we got for budget? Can we do this? Yeah, what the heck? We'll do it. It's fine. More swords, more explosions.
I still love the fact that, you know, the doctor sends Ramon off to get changed, and no matter what the situation, he's in the same clothes every single time.
But with a fishing pole.
Right, with a fishing pole.
Although, note that a huge chunk of his scarf got burned off.
Oh, true, yes.
So, is there continuity? Watch in the next story to see whether or not there's some sort of damage control to the end of the scarf there. All right. We have some important stuff to talk about, so let's volley over to this.
So you remember all that speculation that we went through last week about, you know, what watch this space could possibly mean, and before we even had a chance to actually publish the episode, the BBC was like, yeah, no, you're wrong.
I'm not sure if that's the space we were supposed to be watching.
This is a different space. They put up another billboard while we were watching that space.
Yeah, yeah, because we haven't even gotten to the news for tonight. This is just an extra thing to say, look at us, we are soothsayers here. because we've now had, the night we recorded, I should say the day after we recorded, the day we edited was the day, and this, you know, this is one of those instances where I just stare at my left-hand monitor where I'm editing, and look at my right-hand monitor where my social media feed is going by, and I just shake my head. Because I'm like, literally, why did we just spend the last 45 minutes talking about this? As the BBC makes an official press announcement about the Series 12 writers and directors. Now, looking over this list, as you two have, with the exception of the three names of returning writers, did any of the newly announced writers or directors look familiar to you?
I did recognize Nina Metivier,
I believe that's how it's... I think it's Metivier, or well, I don't know. It depends on how French it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I know that she worked on the show previously, but not as a writer.
Mm. Right. So script editor. So she probably had a hand in a lot of the script crafting. Right.
But that upgrade.
Was, yeah. Now, It Takes You Away was Ed Himes, who is returning. Mm-hmm. So, for those of you who sure love Frog Universes, I don't know if you're going to get any more Frog Universe.
It'll be a Toad Universe this time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for real dry climates. But Nina Metivier or Medvier or however we choose to pronounce it at the moment, was the script editor on that episode. She was also script editor for The Woman Who Fell. So she's also been responsible for reworking some of Chibnall's original drafting too. So that gives me some hope.
Oh yeah.
As far as some of the other names announced, Maxine Alderton really had more work on things like historical drama pieces and such, Emmerdale specifically.
God, if only we could get some historical episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, seeing as how those seem to be some of the real gems of last season too. I know a lot of people were really big on the Discovery of Witches series that we've just been recently handed in the last year or so. So Charlene James, who wrote for a few episodes, two or three episodes, I think, of that particular series, will be on the docket. Vinay Patel of Demons of the Punjab is back.
Yes.
Extremely pleased about that.
Oh, yeah.
And Pete McTighe, who wrote Kerblam, is back. So... I know sort of a mixed response on that particular story, but we'll see. I mean, at this point, it's you've got the benefit of the comfort with the characters, too.
Yeah, true. So,
as far as the directors announced, these are all very new names to me personally, but that's just because I don't have as much exposure to some of the less accessible UK dramas and specifically online series. Nita Manzoor has worked not only on some sitcoms and things, but has also done ones that are not YouTube series, but similar sort of. They're only on online channels. But from what I've been hearing, I think she was the one who was compared as being part of the sort of aligned with the style of Edgar Wright, who did all the, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and the whole Cornetto trilogy, in that way of finding sort of the poignant and the humorous, sort of the biting humor at the same time. So very similar kind of view. So I'm kind of really interested to see what that looks like. Emma Sullivan, again, for me personally, kind of an unfamiliar name, but has worked as much with some TV series as short films. So she's really sort of extended more with that kind of format. Jamie Magnus Stone. Has done some work with sci-fi series, but apparently was involved with a Doctor Who short I'm not familiar with. Clara and the TARDIS. Which webisode was this?
This was it was like Clara alone in the TARDIS. The Doctor was otherwise disposed and she was interacting with the TARDIS. And the TARDIS was, being spicy. And it was more for humor than anything else, and it was just, it really didn't add anything aside from a couple extra minutes of content to the, the year,
which we would be more than happy with getting right now. But
right,
And Lee Haven Jones, who we were rumoring about last week because we had seen some mention of Doctor Who credits being added to his CV. But we know that he's actually worked in the past on Wizards versus Aliens, which was a pretty successful sci-fi series in its own right, which had elements of dark humor as well. So cool to see that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that takes care of a huge amount of the production blocks here, which just as of today, they shared a 17-second little video clip to say, hey, it's a wrap. We're done with production on Series 12. And for those of you who want to look at your calendar and say, you just finished now? I don't know what that means. But
that 17 seconds that we got was more content than we've got in like the past 5 months combined.
Yes. That's true. Well, I think that would be an excellent point for us to draw a line in the sand here and say, want to talk about some news?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's jump in.
Is there some news to talk about, guys?
Hey, guys. Want a job?
Well, it seems the BBC understands that, oh, we've got this global property that brings in a crap ton of money, and people are really excited about it, and we've forgotten that it exists for, like, 12 months.
Yeah.
That we forgot that we had this vacancy, guys. Our bad.
Okay. So, all right. Now that we're done sort of sniping at it for a second, we'll explain. There's a senior marketing executive position open at the BBC, specifically for an individual who would be overseeing the marketing initiatives for, Doctor Who going forward. Mm-hmm. Because I think they've come to the realization that they have been basically lining up the fan base eagerly at the door and then walking out the door, greeting them all with a smile and a wave, and then proceeding to Rochambeau them all one at a time and work their way down the line and say, nothing for you, thump, nothing for you, thump, for almost a calendar year.
So anyone that has any kind of experience in this or any kind of passing interest at all, go ahead and throw your hat into the ring because bound to do a better job than they've been doing so far.
Seriously, I would love to see them inundated with applications of people saying, you know what, I've been running social media campaigns for this, that, the other thing, and whether they be maybe YouTube creators and self promoters who've had their success and say, look, I know how to keep people on hooks waiting for content. I know how to put teasers out there, keep them hungry.
If only we knew somebody that had some kind of marketing director experience that we could put forth.
Dude, I don't know. I think I lost that guy's number. Anyway. it's very telling. Let's just say it's very telling.
Yes, very much so.
But it's another, correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a couple of other items that are going to fall in this category, that there is a big tally board over on the wall that's basically things the BBC should have done a few months ago.
Yeah, especially knowing what's coming up in our news segment. Yes, there are many things that should have happened months ago.
I seriously think everything that we're about to cover for the rest of the news, with the exception of maybe the children in need, all of this should have come to light much earlier than this, or at least been teased earlier than this, whether or not they made the official announcement. But I mean, let's say the first one that we've got here is timely because it's Children of Need is not part of Doctor Who. So that timetable is out of their hands. And having the cast on Children of Need in costume, I mean, it works. There's a long history of Doctor Who being involved in Children of Need. So this is the perfect thing for them to do, to be kind of like, hey, we still exist. Yeah. We're still here.
Right. So, I mean, if you haven't seen the segment out there, and I do absolutely recommend that you do, there are a couple of different cuts of it of varying lengths, or I should say ones that have been edited to sort of hit all the salient points. But Anastasia comes on, this is back from the Children in Need broadcast that they did during the telethon on the 15th, and she's sort of going through, she's telling her story, and she's getting very emotional about it because it was one of these things where, you know, she's, as a result of what she's been dealing with, it has led her to be very introverted and concerned about the way that people would react to her and such. So one of the things she was encouraged to do was to take acting classes. And as anybody who has ever taken an acting class or maybe done an improv or something like that, that's one of the first things they try to work on is feeling comfortable within your own skin. But as she's telling all this, she's getting very emotional. So she's already in tears. And so she's talking to the host, and she's talking about the fact that one of the things that she sees as these bright sort of inspirations is specifically the most recent cast of Doctor Who. So the host says, well, we've got a special message for you, you know, and the screen pops up in the back, and there's Jodie and Mandeep and Tosin, and they're in costume and in character for it, saying, oh, we're here in America, and we're sorry we couldn't be there, and one of them starts to sort of jibe Jodie and say, well, you're the doctor, why don't you fix this? And she says, all right, I will. Cracks her Sonic out of her pocket, points it at the camera, back walls open up, and they come out on stage with her, and Anastasia just dissolves. And it's amazing. And, you know, the whole sequence goes on for like minutes and minutes and minutes, and she's just crying her eyes out, but happily. I mean, this is, but it's, you know, and they give her her own Sonic and everything, and it's just one of these great things. But I'm gonna say this, and I don't often like to get involved in getting bogged down in this stuff, but it bothered me quite a bit. There were internet trolls out there who actually accused the girl of being staged. That she wasn't really involved in the fundraising. She wasn't one of the children that was being affected by any of those efforts, and that her tears weren't real.
Guys, don't be that guy.
Please. Oh,
I will absolutely admit that she was probably staged in the sense that they went through and they said, okay, let's find someone. We've got the cast from Doctor Who on lock. Let's find somebody that's that's really into Doctor Who, and we'll get them on stage for this segment. Like that staging. Yes, I can see them doing that just because of the punch and that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I mean, they have to get this stuff set up, you know, in advance. So for that extent, yes, she was quote unquote staged, but I mean, the fact that people are so butthurt about a female doctor that they can't let anything good come from it,
right,
is just repulsive.
Yeah. And this is where we're at. So yeah. For those who are standing by this and saying, you know what, we get some good stories, we get the content, we get a cast that absolutely loves their characters and is pouring 110% into these things, at least you can say we've got Bradley Walsh, all right. So remember when I was saying how, you know, they were like thumping us over the head repeatedly with this watch this space, which means nothing. Watch this space so that we can tell you how much longer to watch this space.
Yeah.
And this space is just really to keep you so that you stand over here and look over at this other space.
Well, of course.
And through it all, we're theorizing, why is it where we aren't getting production photos? Why aren't we hearing from the cast during all this? I think an embargo has suddenly gone up.
That or Bradley Walsh misplaced his phone for months and he finally found it again.
Yeah, right? Because at least now, in some small capacity, he's able to do some early press junkets and stuff, and, you know, right, sat down with the Radio Times, and is at least able to say, in the ways only he can, that you're going to have the crap scared out of you.
Yep.
So, but he didn't allude to, are these new monsters, classic monsters, things of that sort. I'm not really sure how terribly familiar with the fullest extent of Whovian canon he is, to be able to say, you know, oh, this is a, you know, this classic monster is back or what have you. I'm not sure if he knows it well enough to be able to distinguish, or if he's just,
I'm willing to bet that they were like, okay, this is a new monster. Like that, they probably let him know, and that's why he was so on top of being like, no, this is a new monster, because he seems like the kind of guy where if he's not 100% certain, he's going to be slightly vague just to, so that, you know, he doesn't get something wrong.
He also strikes me as one who might ask a lot of questions on set, you know, shoot conversation around with the production team to say, oh, what is this thing that we're acting? Oh, what's that rubber monster you got over there? Is that a new thing? Is that, you know? So maybe he'd be able to speak more to it if he knew one way or the other. Cool.
So, I mean, at least we know we've got one terrifying monster coming this season. So yeah, there's that.
Sure.
The other thing that we possibly know is rumored at this point is that we're gonna have to wait just one extra week before we get Doctor Who.
From what we thought we might, the earliest we thought we might get it, it definitely will not be. Well, okay. No. All right. Let's back up a little bit. Remember how we were saying how much we can't stand the British tabloids and the fact that the Mirror and the Star and the Sun and those things have been our bane for years on this cast and across the fan base?
Yeah.
The Mirror's been batting a little better in the last year or so. You know, they used to be like 30-40% accurate, and now they're closer to 60-70%.
It's God, these are the end times, guys. I mean, come on.
I know Haley's been building up a lot of thoughts on this.
Yeah. So their big thing is like no Christmas special. That's the title of the article. And then you get into the article and it's the season starting on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Right. And not just you're getting a New Year's Day episode. They're going to use that as the jump off point of the season. Yeah. So New Year's Day falls, I don't have a calendar here in front
like
of me.
It
falls
like Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, it's like midweek. So if this rumor is to be believed, and again, you know, whatever size spoonful of salt you want to take this with, please go ahead and serve yourself some, because it is the Mirror. But again, the fact that this is coming now, after so much quiet, but now that we're starting to get the teaser trailers and the production cycle has just ended, and now all of a sudden all these people start feeling like it's a little safer to chat about what they've been doing for the last couple of months, and maybe, you know, sources are starting to indicate. They say that if we're going to get a New Year's Day start for series 12, but then the next episode
is like the 4th, which is the next Saturday.
Right. So you're like 3 days later in the thing, and then that's the kickoff. So,
and it's a two-parter, so you're getting it in the same week.
Yeah.
So if we just finish filming the end of series 12, I don't see them having that kind of turnaround. Now, we might get a New Year's special, and we might get part two of that on the 4th. Mm. But if that's the case, I'm expecting a long break.
And like 2 months.
March or April before we see the rest of it.
I've been expecting March or April for when the series is coming back. And that's why I was like, maybe it's not that big a deal that we didn't see promotional material yet. Because, you know, the show's 6 months from coming back. But if it's coming back in 6 weeks, like, ramp up, guys.
Here's the monkey wrench in that. That if there was any validity to the rumors that were going around that they had actually had the vast majority of the season in the can months ago and had to go back and do rewrites and reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe that tightens up your window a bit.
And maybe if they're doing like a series long arc this year in a way they didn't really do last year, maybe it's, you know, tying in that bit of breadcrumbs throughout the season. So it's not really directly tied to an episode, but it's, you know, bits and
pieces.
They're
doing all the Missy scenes. Mm-hmm.
They're filming the buttons with the Maitlands, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because Ernie and Arnie are back. Ernie and Bert, or whatever their names were. I don't even remember.
Yeah, no idea.
But the other thing that's slipped in here is that there's a potential return to a Saturday night broadcast.
Yes.
So think about what you will about viewership numbers and how much you think that based on, you know, were some of the missteps last season due to story, which I doubt because I think that some of the stories were really kind of solid. Performances, absolutely not, because I think everybody who was involved in it from the primary to the supporting cast were in it 110%. Then maybe something about the broadcast night did have something to do with it. And that by Sunday night, the impetus to make it must watch kind of programming, at least, you know, within their native region, wasn't quite there. And they have to get back to being Saturday night telly.
Well, I mean, I really think that a part of that is Yeah, the families are the ones who are going to probably watch it live. You know, the families with kids and stuff like that. And Sunday night is like, okay, hey, you know what? I know Doctor Who is coming on, but you need to shower and get in bed because you got school tomorrow. You can watch it on iPlayer tomorrow.
Mm.
Yeah, and then the rest of the, you know, the audience, I mean, let's be honest. Most people have better things to do on a Saturday night, and so they're going to watch it Sunday afternoon on iPlayer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't come out until Sunday night, it's like, I'll catch it later on this week. You know,
sometime this week, yeah.
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 So, no, I do really see that there could be an argument made that Saturday night is the, I mean, that's going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of things to sort of parse on this and really theorize about, because the Saturday night change is one, the fact that if we know that we're dealing with a 10-episode season, if you burn up your first two episodes by the 4th of January and don't take a break, then we're done by March.
By the middle of March, yeah.
Now what? You know?
Just in time for all the American shows to come back from their winter hiatus.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I don't know. It raises a lot of questions. But
I would give you an episode to watch at Galley.
This is true. This is very true. Yeah. Oh, that has huge potential.
Because I'm sure that's what's playing on the BBC executives' minds.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that group of, like, you know, a couple thousand nerds in California? Yeah. We really need to cater to them.
That's going to be the deal breaker. Right. I don't know. Well, yeah.
I mean, well, so, thankfully, the embargo has been lifted and we're actually starting to get some stuff now. So hopefully the news is going to start to come, you know, hard and heavy over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that we're still supposed to be waiting. So I have that space I'm supposed to watch. Yeah. for next week for Doctor Who Day. So, you know, on the 23rd.
Yeah. The player 3 is you know, on his own now. You got to find something to do with that baby monitor. So watch that space instead.
Precisely. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm gonna work on my bioptic vision there, so I can go two directions at once. A little disconcerting for photos, but
well, next week we're getting back into our Torchwood rewatch with episode 9, Random Shoes.
Yeah, this is the one that I always think of when I think of season 1. This is the first episode I think of, because I remember back first time I think the first time I got a chance to watch Torchwood, I was getting Netflix DVDs sent to my house. and this was one.
You're dating yourself, Kier.
I don't care. What Netflix DVDs? It's not that far back.
No, I remember getting DVDs.
Yeah, but this was one where I remember saying, I want to hold on to this disc for an extra. You know, normally, you know, I'd watch them all within a day, ship it back, and just see how fast I can get the next one. This one I hung on to because I wanted to show it to other people, because there was something about the storytelling in this one that I particularly enjoyed. So
we'll see that proves there's different takes on all kinds of things, because I don't remember anything about this one.
Okay, so, cool.
I don't remember any of season 1. What I remember, I think, is all in season 2.
Okay.
So, see, everything I remembered from season 1 was countryside. So this is all kind of new to me. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But this has been episode 357 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, our swords go up to 11.
Nice. Well, this is Kier saying, folks, I have figured it out. I know what our GPR superpower is. If we talk about something and say, you know, we are woefully uninformed, the BBC, moments later, will give us the information that we're missing.
This is Haley saying, I am woefully uninformed of when the new season is starting.
Touché.
We'll see you guys next week.
I don't see you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1-GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Public Radio is copyright 2019. And the... See you next week.